Welcome to In Focus Out of Touch, a video production podcast about all things making video, right? Sitting to my right, your left, if you're watching this on the In Focus Out of Touch YouTube channel, is my co-host Sean. How are you?
Very well.
Good. It's just me on the mic right now. Joining us very shortly, James Payne from OzGarage. OzGarage are a creative agency and they niche into the automotive industry, which is awesome. And we go through all sorts of the productions they're involved in, the kind of clients they work with, and really the relationship they have with their clients moving forward from development to production. I think it's awesome. Some really good insights, some really good learning. So let's jump into this week's episode of In Focus Out of Touch.
And we are rolling.
Alrighty.
Alright.
James Payne.
James Payne from OzGarage. I'm laughing because we just recorded for 44 seconds and my card on my recorder was full. So
I just love that you've owned up to your mistakes.
I'll wear my mistakes. Yep. We're all about transparency on this show. And
good man.
Yeah, but today we've got another guest on our podcast and on our journey to explore other creatives and people sort of dabbling in the video industry alike. So today we've got James Payne from OzGarage. James, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me on, guys.
No worries. Thanks for being here. Now, OzGarage, it's an automotive marketing company. You do a few videos and you actually do quite a bit. So briefly tell us, like, what is OzGarage and what's its background?
Yeah, so OzGarage is a creative agency. We deal entirely in the automotive industry. And you're right, it covers quite a few creative disciplines. We tend to work with our clients that, you know, we like them to come to us with a problem. And then these days we find the best creatives to solve that problem. So it's been really great. It's kind of allowed us to work with some incredibly talented people across the board. And it probably gives us a bit of a unique advantage understanding that automotive industry. That's where we kind of came from. So it kind of skips a little bit of that process with the client where they have to get us up to speed. So we can sort of jump right into that discovery process. So yeah, we sort of do a lot of video projects, social media. A lot of it's very heavily digitally focused. And of course, video makes up a pretty large component of that.
Nice. So you own that video component yourself?
Yeah. So we've gone through stages throughout our sort of years of having internal teams. And now we tend to work with the particular creative that's best for that sort of project.
So tell everyone about your background. How did you get your start? How did you first start getting into video making yourself? And bring us up to now, what is your go-to gear? I'm sure everyone wants to do the little gear comparison.
Yeah, so my one's an interesting one. I'd love to have that story of, you know, I was picking up and making films from, you know, a young age. And mine, I enjoy problem solving. I enjoy learning things. So mine was actually more of, I picked up video skills from necessity. So we've grown as our clients have sort of needed different services. So I was really lucky. We had some great guys, you know, internally and a lot of sort of mentors and teams I've sort of learnt off. I'm a Canon tragic, which... yeah, never goes well. I was saying earlier that, you know, at the moment you get into a tech talk.
Boo.
Yeah, it's just smart people understand Canon works.
Canon is great.
Yeah.
It might just be because Nick and I are like slowly getting into the Blackmagic cameras coming from Sony before that.
And you're annoyingly going to draw me down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, we'll get you.
We've already had the pocket cinema cameras out, trying to just tempt James around to the dark side. Yeah. So, we'll Canon, I mean, did you start learning video on, like a lot of us, like on DSLRs? Tell me a bit about that journey.
Yeah, so mine, I actually started doing sort of motorsport photography on I think it was a 450D back then. Awesome. The good old. A little entry-level one, but I was doing bits and pieces video on that, and we had a couple guys with A7, so it was sort of learning that process, and I think that's why I had an initial hatred for Sony, and out of anything, it's because I didn't understand it. Canon made sense to me. It all felt right. It sat in my hand, so that's where I sort of started, and then now we run a 5D4 and a C100 Mark II. So,
awesome.
You know, the 5D4 is kind of mainly photography, and it gets a little bit of a run as a B camera, but... Yep. the C100 Mark II. I think the person who recommended it to me sort of said it will be your workhorse and was 100% true. It is one of those cameras that, you know, I had discussion with someone and they said what was their ideal setup. And, you know, he was talking about a Red in a studio and, you know, all the gear he could possibly have. And mine was a C100 and a little recorder and running and gunning, you know, because it's just something that it can kind of get you out of every situation. So
yeah, nice. Now, like directing this automotive marketing company, you probably don't have too much time yourself to get out and shoot. Do you find you sort of do a lot of the shooting yourself these days, or do you get creatives along to sort of help you in that process?
Yeah, it's funny. We probably stay pretty flexible depending on the client. So, you know, we still have internal and I do get hands-on quite often for probably the smaller sort of productions that we need. You know, we just need good video content and I've got the skills to back that. Any of our bigger campaigns, we instantly sort of start bringing in and building teams based on what we need. But I'm still in the habit. I carry around the C100, it sits in my hand. And, you know, I technically should be directing and I should be focusing on that. But I still have the camera in my hand because I find it a lot easier to explain what we're trying to achieve when I've got a camera in my hand and I can frame it up and then go, okay, more talented person, you execute this now. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's something special about just shooting something yourself. Like, it is nice being a director and, you know, calling the shots, but there's something so amazing about just being connected to that camera and like pointing it wherever you want to point and just capturing that image. Like, I don't think I'll ever drop that. Like, no matter like where my career goes, like, there's something so special about doing that. Mm. So that's awesome to hear that you
especially if you probably don't do it like in and out 40, 50, 60 hours a week with a camera in your hand, making the time to do that or saying like, yeah, I can dedicate the time to do that. I agree. You get a little buzz from it.
So you mentioned obviously specializing in automotive and that you're pretty knowledgeable and you have experience in that field, which makes it easier to talk to your clients. Do you find it difficult to differentiate your content? So say you might have two similar clients. Like, what do you do to sort of change up a video between the two if the subject matter is similar in nature?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that probably, you know, an answer simplifies probably two years worth of hard work to realize how we do that.
Yeah.
We used to be at a stage where we do sort of content packs where we do a video a month plus some social work for clients. We got to a stage where we had about 14 of those on the books, which meant 14 productions a month. And when you add at least a day of edit, not a lot of time in between.
Yeah.
And that was probably one of the best things we've ever done and probably one of the best things we moved on from. So it gave us that ability to just work out systems, work out how to do things under pressure, but also a big one was how to come up with unique ideas.
Yeah.
When you've got so many, and look, the automotive industry is wide and there's a lot of different sort of niches within that. But at the end of the day, you know, if you were doing sort of car-related things, there's a certain amount of shots you always sort of go back to. So having to try and differentiate that, probably the biggest thing we learned is just the storytelling side of it.
Yeah.
And that's 100% it. That is, you know, it's always hard briefing a client or pitching a client and saying, oh, we tell stories. It sounds a bit sort of, you know, airy-fairy, but it's one of those things where it doesn't matter what the product is or who the person is, they have something unique. And we've done a few sort of clients that are literally selling the same product and they have such a different feel, such a different, you know, want of what they want to portray. And so that's really what's defined us over the last sort of year or so is wanting to just, you know, delve into people's stories and really understand that. And often within businesses, they have these kind of secret hidden gems of, you know, it might be their employees, it might be their directors' stories, might be their suppliers or customers that experience their product that can, you know, really kind of tell its story without the need for scripts. You know, we sit there and just kind of draw that out. And that's probably the biggest thing is that everyone's completely different.
Yeah, I found in documentary work and a lot of like commercial work that sort of turns into documentary work when you're interviewing people, you find the story on site. So when you have a client, sometimes I get a client wanting to like storyboard things out, script things out, and you sort of just have to say to them, look, like, trust me, I've done a lot of these. We can figure it out on the day. Probably better said for some things rather than others. Like, some things you do want to script out and organize down to the nth degree. But that's good. So do you find a lot of your productions, do you find a lot of the story is found while shooting, or do you sort of dig deeper and do a little bit of research before you, say, find someone to interview or go down that path?
Yeah, so this is actually one of my favorite activities. You know, I'm sort of always hands-on involved in the video production side, but one of my favorites is actually finding that story. So generally the process is, you know, we go through the brief process with the client and we do a bit of discovery on their end, and really quite often what we're trying to get is what's the message they want to get across? Because usually we get the few marketing taglines that they give us and go, put this in a video. You know, as you guys know, that often doesn't work. Yeah, so we try and find what the real story is. And then we go through a bit of a process. And generally, you know, if it's a customer or employee, we sort of get them to give us a bit of a short list of who they think might be appropriate. And then I get to give them a call and just sort of have a conversation with them and start trying to find that story. And sometimes that's the first person you talk to. It's great. You know, in one of our cases, I think I interviewed 10 different people till I got to someone who had that story. Wow. And you're kind of just looking for that spark, you know, someone that not only can talk, but, you know, who's just passionate, and you can tell that instantly.
Yeah.
I always run by the rule, if someone says they're bad in front of camera, they're the people you want to be interviewing.
Yes.
Because anyone who says they're good in front of camera, I mean, for some, you know, there's some great stuff that you want to do and it's very planned and storyboard and script, and that's when you need, you know, a polished professional and it makes a difference. But when you're trying to get a story out of someone, if someone says, oh, I'm terrible in front of camera, it's when I start getting excited.
I'm just subtly hit the record button and let them talk. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was just going to ask, like, is there an average, what's the end result will generally be pretty unique to the client, right? Because you're infusing the client into it. Do you have an average kind of format with the videos that you are doing with clients? Do you find that you're starting off with a certain kind of video, branching out into other kind of content, or do your clients sometimes go, we just want a promo video, that's all we want? Talk me through some of the journeys you've gone through with some of your clients around one video, multiple videos, anywhere in between.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting question, because it completely depends on the clients. You know, as you guys would see, there's some that come to us and want us to just execute something.
Yeah.
Which is, in all honesty, we do, because it's a business and, you know, we need to make sure that runs through. But not where we want to be a lot of the time. You know, if it's a straight execution, we go, great, we can get it done. But where we really want to be in is that strategy section. You know, we want to kind of talk them through.
Getting in front of the production itself. Yeah.
And I often talk about in a brief meeting, you know, when we're kind of going through ideas, I'm probably there to test the client a little bit. And I'll always say that to them. You know, I'm gonna suggest ideas and I'm going to push your comfort zone. Luckily, I've got a great account manager who is great at smoothing it over when I push that too far. But we sort of go through that process of starting to see, you know, what that message is, and then different ways we can get that across. And that can be completely different. Sometimes we go in for video and, you know, recently, as Sean knows, you know, it came out as animation or stop motion work. You know, we've had times where it turns into, you know, brand activation. So it's kind of trying to work out what the story is first and then what the best execution is. Because we get someone who goes, I want a 2 to 3 minute video on this. And we go, well, you know, I think one of the best sayings I ever heard was, you know, it's as long as it is good. And that's always what we tell our editors.
Yeah.
You know, they go, how long should it be? And unless it's a very specific, you know, it's got to be on Insta, so it's got to be under a time.
Yeah.
We go, it's as long as it is good. You know, if you can cut it, great. You know, if it needs to flow to have that story, then
yeah. And I feel like in the industry now, like, a lot of marketers, they're wanting quotes for, okay, what's your 15 second quote, what's your 30 second quote, what's your 1 minute quote. And yeah, I've always been a big proponent of story is king. You gotta as long as it's good. That's a great way to put it. And it's something I think it is so important to hammer home right away, just in that discovery phase, just this is about, you know, promoting this or and telling this story. It's not about reaching 60 seconds in an Instagram video. If it does fit in that, great. But if it needs 5 minutes, maybe Instagram isn't your medium you should be using this on.
So I would ask, like, James, if because you've been through the kind of the retainer video model before, as you said, you know, if you could get 10 clients a month paying a couple of grand to do a retainer model where you've only got to do a set format of video, sit down, do a couple of talking heads, and that's it, would you opt for that? Or would you opt for maybe not as many clients, but more creative video work and creative campaigns?
Yeah, that's a super easy one for me. That is our entire sort of business has shifted to the latter. So it's about creativity, and it's, yeah, you know, I'd prefer to give our absolute all in every aspect to less clients than to try and service as many as possible.
Yeah.
You know, look, there's some great things about having multiple clients on the books, you know, on retainers. It makes it easier, you know, for cash flow and business operation, but we even got to a stage with clients where it was almost a stress for them to find the next idea for the next month.
Oh, so yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah.
We would end up having to push them and be like, what have you got? What have you got? And there's this kind of, I don't know, it's like anything, you know, there's money can incentivize you in a job up until a point where you go, I want to do what I love. And yeah, it's the same with us, that we kind of went, well, if we're trying to force you to push out a video next month, why are we doing it?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
there should be
we're
an
just
absolute
doing it to make
purpose.
It. Yeah,
yeah,
and that's probably what we found. You know, there's the odd client that still does approach us for that because it was our sort of business model for a while. And 9 times out of 10, we're able to kind of go, well, hold up, let's look at what you actually need. Let's put a bit of strategy, and when we start putting that together, they go, oh, okay, let's do it slightly less often, but let's put a bit more work into what that production's going
to
be.
Nice. And filtering through then to the other creatives you're going to outsource to and get involved in a project, you've clearly designed a concept or brief with a client. Are you involving that creative as well in that process, or are you someone who kind of likes to go, well, we've kind of mapped it out, just come along and not press record? I know you wouldn't be like that, but you know what I mean? Like, how much input would you generally allow another creative as part of that collaboration with the client?
It's a really good question, and I swear you've been in our meetings recently, because that is something we've been discussing. Yeah, look, it's in an ideal world, we'd love to bring the creative in as early as possible. Sometimes I can get away with, often it's me who's pitching the ideas to the client.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I understand, if we work with that creative, we know their style and we know what we're trying to achieve, quite often I can pitch that and then, you know, bring the creative into that. But yeah, we really are trying to, as much as possible. And we're very transparent with our clients. They know how our business operates. They know that they're going to deal with different creatives.
Yeah.
And that's really good. It's a hugely freeing sort of experience, because after years of us trying to refine internal teams, we found we were trying to make, you know, one editor, one, you know, shooter, one, try and do so many different styles and different things. And it's actually so much better to just recognize talent. And for me, it's really freeing to go, that person is amazing. Let's do something with them. Let's, you know, let's be excited. Let's create a project.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to go, this is what the client wants. Can we achieve it? Can we try and, you know, sort of jerry-rig an approach to get it done?
Yeah. And I've experienced that firsthand. Obviously, we just finished a 30-second piece for a client. It was a stop motion, which it's sort of becoming my niche. But yeah, like it was great to sort of tackle that in an industry like I wasn't too knowledgeable about, so I could pick your brain in terms of storyboarding. But yeah, I think it's a great way to be, to sort of focus on your strengths and like do what you're good at. Maybe get the people who are good at what they do. Yeah, it's such a good way. It's such a good attitude to tackle a creative industry. Yeah,
it's actually the most fun I've had since we kind of switched to that model, is it means that, you know, I saw Sean's work on LinkedIn and went, that's brilliant, And it was the next time I was in with a client that it fit the brief, and I went, great, let's do it.
Yeah.
And it just gives you this really kind of freeing ability to go, let's get the absolute best work we can wherever it is.
Yeah.
Rather than looking around at other people's work and going, I haven't checked whether we can swear, but shit, you know, I can't do that. How do I, you know, and you're trying to keep up with the Joneses around you. I'd prefer to go, they're great at it. Let's do something together.
By the way, you can swear as much as you want.
Fuck yeah.
Wicked. So what are kind of, 'cause every industry, in my experience, has its kind of traditional way of going about media. Especially with this new video thing since 1984, whenever we've had digital video. But it is still a new concept to a lot of people. I'm interested to know what's been your experience with the newer clients that have come to you in that industry as a whole. Is video a regular thing? Should other video producers be going to the automotive industry and looking for gigs?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, video's huge. We often joke that we try and... Like, we almost get pigeonholed as a video production agency, and we're like, we're a creative agency. because it is. That is so often where the first point of contact is we want a video.
Yeah.
And then we kind of step and go, okay, well, why do you want it? And that's the hard question that we probably didn't ask enough of early in the piece, was to say, you know, why do you want it, and step back in the strategy. But, yeah, absolutely. It's a completely visual sort of industry. They really want that, and we kind of see both sides. So we say automotive industry, and people often think, you know, car dealerships. That's one way. We actually do very little with them. A lot of ours is in manufacturing, and sort of the aftermarket side, and it's where they have what could be pretty boring products, and they need to show that in a visually exciting way. They need to explain their story. A lot of them are Australian made, and they just don't know how to get that message across.
Yep.
And that's where we love, you know, you talk to their employees, and there's no way better to show, you know, how important Australian made is until you speak to their local staff that are working in a factory that, you know, that's what puts food on their table. So
yeah.
Speaking on making boring interesting, like say like you have a product like a battery. What's one example of a home run you've marketed a project? It could be video, could be otherwise, something that you've initially looked at and said, oh, this is going to be a tricky one to make interesting. Are there any examples that you've just like, boom, yes, we nailed that, I'm so happy with the end result?
Can I just say, didn't your stop motion video involve batteries?
Yes.
Sounds like Sean might be looking for a plug, everybody.
I was actually thinking that. I was like, well, that is one example. Do I play into this? Or
wasn't
necessary. Don't do it, James. Don't
okay,
do it.
I mean, apart,
I can't
apart
see
from
in the
that.
Video, but he's threatening me at this point.
I've got a gun under the table.
Yeah.
No, look, okay, that was a particularly great example of a way that we took a product that could have been pretty sort of... I think the brief from the client for that was basically saying, we need to, it's an auto electrician network. We need to advertise at a supercars event, motorsport event on the screen. And it was probably just going to be a pretty average recut. You know, we'd done some really exciting, fun campaigns with them before, but it was a bit of a, let's just throw it together.
Right.
And that was an example where, you know, speaking with Sean and working with him, we were able to kind of really put a bit of a quirky edge on it and develop this sort of stop motion video explaining the concept, but something that people just haven't seen. You know, particularly at a motorsport event, you don't often see this, you know, very artistic stop motion, you know.
That's a fair point. Yeah, very unique.
And that's probably where, you know, I come from a bit of a different, most sort of agency people have come from a creative point and then learnt the industries they end up sort of niching in.
Yeah.
I'm probably the opposite way. I've come from the automotive side and really kind of learnt that industry and then looked at how we can take inspiration from everything else and bring it across. And it's really fun, you know, because everyone thinks the automotive industry, you have to be pretty blokey and pretty, oh, I don't know, it's pretty much racing flags and the colors red and black.
Yeah.
so it's kind of nice to take that. And, you know, what it feels so progressive in the automotive industry as we can introduce this and realize that, you know, car people, their customers are of pretty varying sort. So
yeah, I think a problem in the marketing industry as a whole is a lot of people don't like or want things that are super different. Like they'll say they want something different, but it still needs to be a bit the same. I was so chuffed when you came to me with that video, because it's like, it is sort of like a weird thing to do for automotive marketing, but I love when you can sort of marry up, you know, something sort of weird and quirky and like bring it to another industry. It's sort of like a breath of fresh air to sort of do that.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's really what we try and do. I joke about, you know, I think because I started the business pretty young, I used to call it the mum test, but it's now my wife's test that, you know, I take home any work we do and I show it to my wife and go, you know, what do you think? She doesn't have a great interest in the automotive industry, but it's still got to appeal.
Yeah.
And that's my test. You know, yeah. any you know, if I play a video that we've done for a campaign and go, great, have a watch, and she doesn't understand it, and or, you know, doesn't resonate with it, doesn't react, I go, it's kind of like an inside joke. You know, you have to explain it. It doesn't work. So it's, you know, we really kind of aim to have that sort of general appeal. And that's what helps sort of dealing with different creatives that have different experiences. So, you know, it's often myself that adds the automotive knowledge, but we want to deal with people that come with fresh breath of air and you know, a fresh set of eyes to look at problems differently.
That's great. So once you've gone through that process, the wife test a few times, I imagine, and probably gone back and forth in the internal team, how much input when you're ready to start showing the client the work, how much input are you generally allowing or hoping for from the client? Because I found in the past that you can then put something in front of a client and occasionally they've seen something in the meantime or something's switched in their head with like, no, we need to go down this direction now. And so the creative actually does start to change a fair bit. How, like, what's that process like for you guys?
Yeah, that's a really good one. You know, I think I heard you guys talking on an earlier episode about that sort of revision process and what happens in there. Look, it does change depending on the size of the campaign. You know, our bigger campaigns, they get a lot more say in that and it does go back and forth. And we almost to a degree, you know, if it's the right campaign, we don't limit revisions, which sounds dangerous, but, you know, most times it works out. On smaller productions, we're obviously a lot more sort of fixed on it. It's usually 1 to 2 revisions max. But the biggest lesson probably I learnt, you know, over the years of pumping things out was that open the doors earlier, be more transparent and show that process. Yeah. And that's, we didn't get that right. You know, we spent a long time kind of going, we'll see you on the day of production. You'll see the first, you know, version and then give us your feedback. And we probably had to realize that if a client didn't see the process, you know, they're not there. They don't see your timeline. They don't see, you know, the amount of work that goes into post-processing or your thought process. So we wanted to kind of open that process. Mm-hmm. So we try and show them earlier. And that's hard. Like there's no, I still haven't mastered that. I still cringe. Yeah. I've sent some pretty bad emails that go, here are all the caveats. You know, there's no color grade. There's no this, there's no that. I'm sorry. Yeah. You know,
I have a list. I literally copy and paste now. I have a list when I have to do that. And that says all of these things that are wrong in the video. And I do cringe as well, because it's like you're drawing attention to those things. But ironically, I generally have to do that when I know it's going around a lot of stakeholders. You know, it's not just one person owning a project. It's going through a lot of rungs. And what do they then talk about? All the things I've said in that bloody email.
Yeah, because they don't share the email.
Read the email. Yeah, exactly.
Read the email. Yeah. I know when we had Andrew Barnes from Share Story on, he sort of took us through his client revision process or client like video reveal process. And, you know, he has his own sort of studio where clients can come in and watch it. And then he shows what's under the hood, their video timelines and all the effort they put into it. I suppose your sort of end product reveal might be a bit different. Did you have a process, or is it just straight up, you know, what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think of this?
It's a really interesting one, because I heard Andrew and I'm like, that is a great idea. And we probably did it for a few clients over the years where we'd bring them in and show them in the office and show them on the TV. But for me, trying to break that, you know, sending it quick. So we actually, you know, I'm very heavy on having a client on the shoot at all times. And I want someone who actually understands a little bit. Who you know, we kind of go through the day and I make sure that I'm sort of pointing out, hey, this is the shot. Do you want to come and have a look? You know, be part of the process, which can be annoying, you know, having someone sit over your shoulder while you're working. But I want that. So I want them to feel involved in the production side.
What a great way to build a trust, though, in what you're doing.
And the thing is, you know, as far as building relationships with clients, it's much harder when it's a one-off project.
Yeah,
there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
But to build relationships, it's so much easier, because once you've done it, you know, once or twice. I had a client, we're doing a shoot down in Bathurst the other day, and we basically said, you know, come over, have a look at the interview shot before we, you know, start recording. And he said, to be honest, I've never seen a shot you framed up and thought I could make it better. And he went, I trust you.
That's trust.
And I'm like, that's brilliant. But that doesn't come without showing, you know, that transparency first. You know, we don't want them to just think that we're infallible, because there are times that they come across and go, hey, that thing in the background, or can we shift this slightly? And it's brilliant. So
I was testing you. You saw it. I was testing you.
I've got into a bad joke of pitching clients' ideas back to them. So on that particular shoot, the talent that we were filming was like, oh, we should try up on that grandstand. And I'd been looking for a location all day. And then I was like, nah, that's terrible. And then 2 minutes later, I was like, so that grandstand looks fantastic. And he's just kind of looking at me. But that, you know, having that process is brilliant. And same with the post side of things.
Yeah.
Is so one, you know, it's a simple tool, but Vimeo's review process is actually one of the best things we introduced.
Mm.
So simple. You know, it's nothing crazy, but the ability for a client to watch the video right there and then click on what scene they're talking about and write a note, and us being able to have that conversation right there, because the moment it becomes an emails, people get into long paragraphs and, you know, they're trying to explain the scene they're talking about. Mm. And to just have that process, so we try and send it really early, and, you know, we send it in assembly stage, which is pretty rough, but then they can have all their feedback. And then by the time we're up to version two, they can see, you know, our replies from our team of who's done it, what they've done. And sometimes too, it's not about always having the right answer.
Yeah,
sometimes
we're
able to go, hey, it's actually not possible. This is what we've tried, you know, X, Y, and Z. What do you think? And starting that conversation, because I think in early days, you want to be the expert.
Yeah.
Mm.
And so you try very hard to always have the perfect answer.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I've found recently I do a lot of pushing back, not just because I'm stubborn, clients, okay. But no, they do think, or they might have a suggestion or say, hey, I'd love to see this here, or could we put a shot of this in here? And it's I found by going back and pushing back when it's not necessary, or even just the other day, someone said, hey, can we move this because it's a double up? And usually I would love something we covered earlier in another video, and usually I'd say, yeah, we don't want to repeat information. But this was very specific information to people who had had injuries to themselves, and so it was necessary that they'd never come across this information before. They'd need to hear it a couple of times for it to sink in. So I pushed back and I said, no, I think we need to actually keep that. I'd actually add a few more shots from the last video so people can go like, oh yeah, that's right, I've seen that. And they went like, yeah, great idea. You know, so I think it actually helps with the authority when you're not just waiting for instructions. What do you want next? What do you want to leave in, take out? You tell me and I'm your robot. But it's that collaborative kind of method that you end up with a better result, right? And then the client's even happier.
Yeah, I think like when you're doing that, it is very important to sort of describe your viewpoint and like, this is why I think we shouldn't do that, or this is what we should do instead. And something I learned very early on is to just manage expectations from the very beginning.
Mm.
And then that review process is so much less of a headache, for lack of better words, when it comes to it. Because they know things they can change. They know things they can't, and the reasons why. It's easy to think you're infallible and you can't do anything wrong, but sometimes every now and then a client will say something that's right that you don't want to believe is right. But and they're like, no, damn it. Yeah.
Happens a lot to me, if I'm honest.
You sort of just have to accept I didn't see that. So yeah, you have to suck it up.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely I make it sound like such a smooth process and we all hold hands and walk down the road. You get that email that comes through and you go, there's a few expletives and you're really frustrated because you want the best product and you think you put the best product there.
Yeah.
But I've just found so often that it's always ended up better down the run. Mm. And I, Nick, you sort of talk about that pushback. I always have one pushback.
Yeah.
And I think that's what holds me into that limit is that I'll push back once to see, if I believe that we've gone down the right path or there's a better option for them, push back once. And if they come back saying, no, we want it, I do not question them from that point on that particular matter.
Yeah.
So that, they know I will always push for the best product. I'll always try and push their comfort zone, particularly when you're dealing with corporates. You really do need to push. Generally, it's small business owners and medium that, come with some wacky ideas. The corporates, it's really about pushing that sort of comfort zone.
Yeah, yeah.
But then knowing that if they come back and say it's a hard and fast rule, that we go, absolutely, we'll get it done.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of, kept a really nice little level that it means we get that creative vent back, but we know, where the limit is.
Nice.
Because I think that's it. The moment you get in, if you're pushing back more than once, you're arguing with the person who pays your bills.
You don't want to do that. Yeah. It like in this business, it can be a struggle sometimes. I've found when you've got your business hat on, but you've also got your creative hat on, and you're almost fighting with yourself, trying to get what your creative side wants, but the business side, it's like, yep, just have to do this. It's just something I have to do.
Well, is there a campaign or a video production that you've pitched to a client and it hasn't happened and you are like, this is my white whale. This is the one I would really like to do. Is the campaign from a creative standpoint that you are yet to do that you're really wanting to?
Ooh. Yeah, that's an interesting one. Look, there's one, and I probably should be careful because there's a potential it could happen.
You don't have to say names.
I was hoping to find think of one that was a couple of years ago and was never going to happen. There's one that we pitched recently, and to be honest, we went into the client and they were. I was going into a meeting thinking we were going to do amazing things and they'd brought us in for that, and I got a pretty literally in the first 30 seconds it was kind of like, we're good. We have an agency, we have people doing what we need. And it was almost like exit stage left. There you go. And so I flipped. I kind of went, well, if we're not gonna get through easy, I'm just gonna throw a cracking idea at you and be pretty brazen about it and then see, how it works. If we lost it, we'd lost nothing. So but it was a trip to it was someone in the lifestyle industry, so like caravans, camper trailer, that sort of side. And it was a trip to a desert track in the Northern Territory, and it was going to be about 7 days of filming, and we were really going to kind of step it up from, that industry is full of, reviews from media publications, and it's all pretty bland. And the other side is, it's 4x4 guys with camcorders running around, drinking beers. So we kind of really wanted to add that polish and that story. And I was so looking forward to it because we want to do a bit with the indigenous culture around that area and build up, it was named after this track. So we wanted to have that sort of, why was it named? Give it some meaning and, talk about how it's an absolute rugged track. It's, it really is a testing experience and kind of tie that in. And so I just couldn't wait for it. So I'm hoping it's one of those projects that, you get the, we're not quite ready and, we'll get there. So
one day.
I'm hoping that'll come up one day. But for me, that idea of just being able to take in something so amazing and have that kind of nature experience as well as being a very commercial shoot, I don't know. I figure we work hard in this industry. We might as well take away amazing experiences, and it's a trip I probably wouldn't be able to do myself. So, why not enjoy that with a client? So
I like it. That's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So closing off, where do you see the future of Oz Garage going? Is it sort of more of the same, or do you have a vision of what you want to turn it into? Whether that's international, if you feel you could jump there, or
World Garage.
That's right.
You know what the weird answer is? I love what we do. I've always said, you know, and luckily we have worked with a few international brands now, and we're really, you know, we're at the stage where we're working with some pretty large corporates, and that gives us a lot more freedom of what we can do in campaigns. So that's been an absolute dream, and I'm hoping to continue that. But to be honest, my thing is I just always want problems, which sounds really weird, but I just want the next project for them to have, you know, a unique problem that we can solve in a creative way. And I'll be happy, you know, particularly as a business owner, if there is just new problems in front of me constantly and there's more we can do and more we can experience, that's my dream.
Yep.
And that's really it. You know, I want to keep working with new talented creatives, and that's it. The more, you know, I thought I knew a fair bit about video. I've been doing it for long enough, and I've had enough hours on the C100. The poor thing's looking a bit worn. But every time I work with someone new, I just learn how much more there is, you know, and
you don't
just
know the stuff you don't know.
Oh, and that's it. And it's so thrilling, because every time you just go, wow, that was beyond what I could expect. And until the next time when you work with someone different, and it's so that process for me is just that constantly learning and constantly coming up with fresh solutions is brilliant. Mm. So I mean, that's my enjoyment is just kind of getting to see that and seeing people that have just perfected their craft. So
awesome. Well, this has been a good chat. I don't know if you have any extra questions.
I probably do, but they will interrupt the flow of how we're going, so I think we're good. So James, thanks so much for coming along and giving us a little bit of a peek behind the scenes of Oz Garage and your approach to video production as well. Really cool. So we'll put links to all the contact info in the show notes. If you're watching this, then go ahead and subscribe. If you're listening to this, please head to your favorite podcast app and give us a rating and review. It takes 3 + 40 seconds. So it'll take
43 seconds?
Correct.
All right.
But that'll be great. We can get the word out on the show to more and more video producers out there.
Yes. And if you are a budding filmmaker or you're involved in the creative industry in any way and you think you could talk better than us two idiots,
It's a low bar.
Email us at infocusoutoftouch@gmail.com and say hey.
We'll catch you guys next week. Thanks, James.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.